So we got Blue Velvet on in the background. Let's see now.
It relaxes me. When Blue Velvet is on, I feel all just at ease.
Yeah, definitely.
It's that kind of film.
It's kind of like you need darkness to know that there's light.
Yeah.
I just think it's cool that Dean Stockwell's in this movie.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Because I didn't know, but I guess Dean Stockwell's kind of a weirdo in real life.
He's
like an old actor. Like he's done stuff for a long time, so he's like ingrained in this old like Hollywood thing. But I just knew Dean Stockwell from Quantum Leap when I was a kid. So he was Al. Right. So it seemed like kind of a character actor, kind of a funny guy. I mean, he's been pretty good in the new Battlestar Galactica.
Kind of interesting. Who he's always kind of reminded me of, just a little bit in the looks and the movement, is Dan Hedaya.
Or Robert Blake.
Robert Blake, who's also a David Lynch guy.
That's right.
But I've always, every time I watch a movie with Hedaya in it, like Clueless or Alien Resurrection, I always start thinking of Dean Stockwell in the back of my mind. I always think, I wonder what Dean Stockwell is.
Yeah, exactly. And how much better would Commando have been if it had been Dean Stockwell? Who's to say? We shall never know unless they remade Commando.
I don't know
Commando.
If Dean Stockwell could have saved Commando. Yeah, honestly, does Commando need saving? I don't think so.
No.
I think we've probably established that it's almost the perfect movie for any occasion. Bar mitzvahs, bris, all Jewish. yeah.
Basically, yeah. Just those. Those and maybe a christening or something.
Yeah, yeah. Did we already discuss Unforgiven, or did we just talk about that without...
We have not talked about it yet.
So, that's being a Best Picture winner, Best Director,
considered
blah, blah,
blah. Very big, yeah.
How do you feel? I mean, it's also, once again, a revisionist Western.
Definitely. It's at least informed by the Western.
Yeah, well, it's the whole anti-hero thing. And,
definitely.
By the way, if I can just aside for a second... I was watching The Chase, the Charlie Sheen film the other day, just because it was on.
And Christy Swanson?
Yes.
And Flea?
Yeah.
Flea, and Anthony Kiefer Gatiss, Southern and yeah. Henry Rollins?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Terrible movie. So, during one part of that film, Charlie Sheen's lawyer, who's the guy, Quado, he's watching The Chase on TV, and Charlie Sheen's character's name is Jack.
Uh-huh.
And this is exactly his line. He goes... He's watching Run Toward the Mexican Border. He goes, come on, Jack, you anti-hero. He calls him an anti-hero. I think that might possibly be the only time in any film in the history of the Earth that someone calls another character an anti-hero, just flat out calls him that on the screen. Have you ever heard anyone call someone an anti-hero in a film? If it's not a joke.
I don't think so. I mean, it's definitely a term that gets tossed around a lot, and I think it's come full circle, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, that's... That sounds like that was a joke, though.
It might have been. I don't.
Isn't that a comedy?
No.
The Chase is not a comedy.
Not really. I mean, it's one of those like PG-13 cool like action. Like it's what a Michael Bay film would have been if it was directed by someone who I was just going to say directed Madonna videos, but that doesn't work. I don't know. Someone who used to shoot stuff for Sesame Street. I don't know. It wasn't. Yeah.
Use your me.
I don't know.
Instead of your. Table.
Yeah.
because we get
oh,
peace.
Okay. All right. Anyway, that was my aside, anti-hero thing. So in Unforgiven, it's basically considered like maybe the best of that revisionist genre, especially in the more modern stuff. So what do you feel now? Now you can refute that because I know you're probably going to be negative about it.
Well, I'm not going to be negative about it, but I mean, I'm looking at it post all the stuff that it was analyzed in retrospect.
Okay, that was a complete
line of crap. I don't know. Okay, when it came out, it was like 92.
92.
And the riots had just happened down in L.A.
Right.
Everybody took it all as one big big reference to that. It was all one big anti-violence thing. And Gene Hackman is... I guess they said that Clint Eastwood told Gene Hackman to base his portrayal off Daryl Gates, who was like the chief of police in L.A.
Yeah.
So there's that. It's supposed to be anti-gun. It's supposed to be anti-violence. And I'm looking at it way post all that. You know, that happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
15 years after it was made, I'm looking at it, and I'm doing two things. I'm going, one, is this thing Oscar caliber? And two, okay, what do I think of it? You know? And I don't know. I didn't say it being spectacularly Oscar-rific. I didn't like the text at the beginning and the text at the end because it made it seem like it was almost like he was a real character.
Yeah, right.
But he wasn't a real character. I even looked that up just to see if it was based on a true something.
I don't know. I don't see a problem with that.
I think it was his time. I think it was his turn. And I think it made sense. So I would give it yes. You know,
I think it's a fantastic film personally.
No, I think it was a good movie.
I think Mystic River and Million Dollar Baby are really overrated pieces of melodramatic maudlin stuff that like
I haven't seen Million Dollar Baby. What I saw from the trailers of Mystic River just looked ridiculously overdone.
But you know what? Here's the thing though. I say this stuff about Mystic River every time I'm not watching it. When you're watching it, you are absolutely drawn into it. And the acting is spectacular. The score is incredible. And it all makes this really beautiful piece of work watching it afterwards. You're like, that thing was so... It like, the word I'm looking for is like, you know, it's basically, it's tricking you into feeling things because it's using the score.
Well,
and
yeah, absolutely.
And
I'm pretty weary to that, to be honest.
Oh, totally. So, I am too. But it absolutely, I mean... He's really effective with that stuff, and I hate him for it, because I don't like... I try not to like Mr. River. I didn't like Million Dollar Baby.
Okay, so back to Unforgiven.
Yeah.
So I always do the things I don't like, so then I can talk about the things I do like, and then reference, you know, and go back and forth. That's just my style. I kind of have to come from a negative place in order to find positivity. That's my approach to problem solving, which is what movie criticism is. It's problem solving.
Sure.
No, it's not.
No.
Okay, so I didn't think Gene Hackman was a bad guy ever in that movie.
Okay.
I don't think that he started as a good guy and then became a bad guy. Because basically, here's how the world is. You have, let's take the imaginary world or pseudo-realistic world of the West. You know, you gotta control what you can control. There's this town, Whiskey Town or whatever it's called, and the rule is that you do not carry firearms in this town. Okay, fine. That's one of the rules. There is a sheriff. He's law and order. What he says goes. There's no judge, jury, executioner thing. They just don't have that sort of infrastructure set up right now. You know, there's a bar, there's some prostitutes, there's whatever. The whole thing starts, the whole conflict that erupts into chaos starts because a prostitute laughs at a guy for having a small dick. So, in truth, the whole conflict starts because one guy's insecure about his penis. Which is pretty funny. Then the next thing is escalated because Frances Fisher, one of Eastwood's old broads, who's the leader of all the prostitutes, is mad that then they're not punished badly enough. And the reason she's actually mad, just back to insecurity stuff, she realizes she doesn't like being a prostitute. She doesn't like that they're treated that way, but you know what? That's the way prostitutes can sometimes be treated. And sure, there's ways to punish the people that do that, and he does punish them. But he doesn't punish them well enough for her mind. So they decide to take the law into their own hands. They decide that what is the law is not acceptable by their means. Which, you know, they're not Judge Dredd, so... Okay, I'm not cool with that. And so they decide to hire these bounty hunters or whatever. They decide to hire out local help to kill these guys. Which is illegal. Let's just face it. And all Hackman's ever trying to do throughout the whole rest of the movie is keep these bounty hunters from coming into his town, breaking the law by having weapons, and creating more chaos. He has to show by example that what he says goes.
I think you're being really kind to Hackman's character. You're being very
kind. At what point? When he beats the shit out of English Bob, that totally makes sense.
Oh.
That totally makes sense.
Well, that's the thing, though.
He needed to make that point.
Here's the thing. Is it bad that it's that way? Because I mean, this is a whole thing about an anti-hero and anti-hero.
It kind of is. But
doing this thing that is like Western justice instead of the law. You know,
yeah.
Like not following the letter of the law and something worth being more and stuff like that. Why does it have to be that Clint Eastwood has to be some black and white bad guy, or that Hackman has to be some black and white bad guy? He's a violent.
I'm not saying he's a pure,
you know,
good guy.
Hubris.
Yeah, there is hubris there, and okay, you do get a hint of. I think the biggest hint of that is when the biographer comes into
it.
I mean, there's some great lines. I think Hackman has some great lines about gunplay and stuff.
Yeah, right.
When he's talking to the biographer, then it becomes clear that there's definitely hubris with his relationship to the biographer. How the biographer's kind of following him around, thinking, oh, he's the real guy to write about. And then when he makes a joke about hanging the carpenter, Hackman's like, what'd you say?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this guy takes himself a little too seriously. So you can get that sense. But, I mean, then, of course, the thing, okay, more ambiguity that was needless. Eastwood's friend, Logan, played by, what's his name? Morgan Freeman. This is another case where you're talking about, like, is that revisionism? He's black, yes. But it doesn't matter in the whole movie
right.
at all.
Right.
Except at the end when they're whipping him and it's totally like something out of Roots, just yeah. because visually that's what you see. You're like, there's a white guy whipping a black guy that's tied up. That's powerful. That's some scary shit. But the fact that he's black is never relevant in the rest of the movie. It never is mentioned. I mean, it's not like when they go to meet up with the kid shows some kind of prejudice towards him. Things that I think would be pretty prevalent back then. I mean, this is only, what is
right.
it?
Well, it's 1880 or something.
Yeah, it's like
that,
not so. Very long after the Civil War.
Right.
So there's kind of a weird free pass. But the point is that apparently Hackman kills him by beating him to death. But you hear that it was an accident. You never actually see it happen, and so it's not as powerful. And so Eastwood's divine retribution at the end, when he just kills everybody, which is awesome. I'll give you that.
Totally awesome.
It's less potent because you know what I actually got a kick out of it was the first time when he's in the bar and
yeah.
he's all sick.
Yeah.
He's like got like pneumonia or
yeah,
something,
right.
and Hackman comes in and he's walking towards him. And I'm like, whatever this is going to be, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be like higher echelon.
Yeah,
awesome.
Totally.
And it was because it was like they beat the crap out of him. And you're like, now he's going to... He got the obligatory guy gets the crap beaten out of him, which Eastwood, I think, does in like every western.
Oh, totally, yeah.
And then he has to go recuperate for a couple of weeks, shoot a couple of cans, and then he goes back and he takes care of everybody.
Yeah. You're the best around.
Yeah, they should have done that one of these days. You get one of those like wooden things that's
yeah.
got like 15 arms that you do the Bruce Lee practicing like, fighting moves with.
But okay, I'm still really kind of upset about this thing about the Hackman character. I mean, he does.
He crosses some line.
He kills Morgan Freeman, pretty much. You still don't think...
And then
what about that line at the end where he says...
That was too throwaway. It was too throwaway because they didn't
okay.
show it.
That's gratuitous if they show it, though.
Well, they didn't have to show it, like, in a gratuitous way. What? I'm starting from one stance, and I'm working backwards
okay.
because that's kind of, like, a more interesting
okay.
argument.
All right.
I could just say, ambiguity, and then you could go, yeah, ambiguity, and we wouldn't have an interesting conversation. It would be like, yeah, did he do what he needed to maintain law and order in there? In the end, I felt like what happened needed to happen. Eastwood needed to go in and kill. It needed to be flushed. Hackman was damaged goods. He had killed a guy, he had gone too far, they needed a new sheriff, you know, maybe the next guy would come in and do a better job.
Right.
But it still felt like my sympathies were more with Hackman than I wanted them to be.
What about, how about this, there's that line toward the end, actually right before
Hackman
is killed, where he says something like,
I don't deserve
yeah,
it.
He said,
I remember
exactly
I just saw
point.
It.
And he says, like, deserve
I was,
has nothing
I was,
to do with
I
it.
Was building a house, yeah.
Yeah, and he says, no, he deserves got nothing
to do with kill.
Yeah,
Eastwood's got a lot of what are considered awesome lines, but horribly cliche, you know,
oh,
like, killing, don't make a man a man.
There's nothing in...
Take away everything he is
yeah,
and everything
and,
he will
exactly.
Be.
It's the same with Mr. River and Million Dollar Baby.
Well,
there's nothing that's not a cliche in any of his stuff, but it's powerful.
It's good stuff. No, I mean, and... I did like that how after all that craziness happened, as he was walking out, he had to remind all the people that were still out there. Because it's like, that's the thing
yeah.
in Westerns. It's like, oh yeah.
By the way, all these people might
still
kill you.
Out
yeah.
there. And, he's like, and if any of you, I'm going to come back and kill everybody.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you buy it. Anti-heroes are tough for me because I need to get a more visceral expression of the villainy that they've done. Maybe it needs to be flashbacks. Maybe it needs to be like a longer, like an episodic
yeah.
series thing where you see them go from being a bad guy to kind of a good guy.
In that case, though, that's almost asking too much because honestly, the anti-hero is still a hero.
That's
in almost all major film ways you look at it. And I think the only real anti-hero is basically if you're watching a film about a bad guy and he's by default the protagonist.
Yeah.
It's not the thing like Payback, which is obviously you don't see him do anything bad and he's just like, I'm a bad guy, but I'm getting revenge, whatever.
I'm bad in a good way.
You know? I think it's something like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, you know, but like somebody that like is made into a cult hero by people who like serial killers and they're watching that film like, yeah, this guy's awesome. That sort of thing. That's not even really an anti-hero, but you know what I mean, because the anti-hero is something that has been where you don't see, I think, honestly, and you mentioned the emails before we did this that you want to talk about Straw Dogs.
Yeah.
That's an anti-hero, because
Dustin Hoffman's character, the anti-hero?
He becomes one, because he doesn't do anything good at all. He's the protagonist of the film. He doesn't do anything good.
He doesn't do a hell of a lot.
No, but
I mean, he's good or bad. He doesn't really do anything
bad,
though.
But then when he does, when he quote-unquote protects his house,
and his. Exactly, just like what Hackman's doing.
After his wife's already been taken, which was the whole point, and he's lost everything, you know, that
his wife wasn't taken. His wife's in the house at that point, right?
No, taken sexually.
Oh, well, yeah. We'll get into all that. We'll get into the whole, we'll get it back into Straw Dogs, and we'll bring it back around.
Okay, all right. But I just think that, I don't know.
You were on the anti-hero thing.
Yeah, I think that the anti-hero, if you show it all, he no longer becomes an anti-hero, even if you do Paul Morales' protagonist, because it's too much to ask the regular audience member.
All they needed to do with, then they did too much referencing it for me. In Unforgiven, they did too much. Like they referenced it a little at the beginning, and you're like, okay, this guy was kind of a bad guy.
Like,
kind of a
shooter. Like, reminding you.
But then towards the end, it's like, what, you blew up a train and killed women and children.
Yeah,
and then it's like, whoa, let's just throw that big one in there that basically says that he's a mass murderer.
Right,
before it was like he was just like a drunk, and he would like, you know, he would shoot other drunks, and, you know, he was a tough, mean guy.
Well,
he was established early on that he was reformed
by the love of a good woman.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
And so, you know, I think that's supposed to show the thing about, like, how, you know, no one's beyond redemption, but then when it comes down to it, he is still what his nature made him.
Kind of, except then he goes back and he gets his kids and then they go to San Francisco.
Or he still had it innately.
He starts a dry goods business and does rather well. I can just see him with a pocket watch and everything else in San Francisco, you know. And that just, I don't know, that part seemed kind of stupid.
Eastwood's characters are always above, you know, sort of, his characters are always too perfect in his own, you know.
I like that he was, it had elements of humor in it that I really enjoyed. That he couldn't get on his horse half the time.
Yeah.
And that was funny. Yeah. That he kept things that are like dark humor, really, too. Like, he kept talking about how I don't want to do that no more. And you know, like, when people talk about something a lot, that they're kind of neurotically obsessed about it, that's because it's a problem for them. It's like, you know, no, I don't drink no more. I've cured that. I'm done killing people and stuff. And you just, like no, you know that it's like, that's because it's still a problem for you. You're going to jump right back into that if you need to, and he does.
Honestly, I
love when he grabbed the bottle, too.
And
just started drinking, and you're like, because you almost don't catch it. It's not like it's done as, like, a defining scene. It's just like, nope, he just grabs it, he has a couple of drinks, and he thinks about some stuff. Well, I guess he's drinking again. So, I mean, I give it, like, a pretty good rating, but I wouldn't give it this whole allegory for the LA riots or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't even heard that, so I'm glad I didn't, because I generally don't like to... I think
it was super anti-gun or anti-violence either. I mean, I think it was, if anything, it was...
Kyle MacLachlan is receiving a blowjob right now.
From Isabella Rossellini.
Yes.